Blog Talk Radio.
Frank Reardon, and this is your mother's medicine cabinet. Hope you had a good New Year's and Christmas. I mean, we haven't been on, hadn't had a show in about 3 weeks, but anyways, we'll be here every Monday, same time, till up through March, and then the show's over. Next week we'll be here at 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific, with John Macker. But tonight, out of San Francisco, we have with her new book from Epic Rights Press, Iron. We have Zarina Zabriskie, so we're just going to bring her on. I don't like talking to dead air.
Hey, Frank.
Hi, how are you doing?
Hey, can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Good.
How's it going in San Francisco tonight?
I'm going well. It's warm. I'm ready. Looking forward to it. It's green and all.
Yeah. So we're just going to start out there. How'd your book come about with Wolfgang Karstens?
The book is doing quite well, thank you. I feel like I'm talking about a patient in the hospital. No, but it's, you know, it came out in November, and since then we're in the second printing, and you know Wolf, we worked with him. He's a dynamite of a publisher, and so there's a lot of good things happening, and I'm just grateful to have the readers, and yeah.
That's excellent. That's good to hear. Yeah, Wolfgang's been doing some good stuff there for a few years now. But, okay, I'm going to give it to your choice. Like, I mean, do you want to, you can read from your book or whatever else you want, short stories or poems or whatever you want. You could just start off, and we got an hour, so length doesn't really matter.
So it's, I guess it's between us what we decide to do. I have a few stories here. I probably won't read from Iron anymore because I read a story from Iron and it is available unless you think I should. But I have some other stories. I have prepared a story from my second short story collection that will be forthcoming this year. So like to do a little sampler, or I have some poems here. We can talk.
That's okay, why don't you start with
you have in mind.
You could start with one of your short stories first if you want to.
Okay. Okay, we can do that. I have a story that's a little bit more fun. I have two types of stories, or maybe more, but two general categories. One is categorized by my friends as a Russian gloom, kind of bleeding, dark stories that make you sad. And then there are other type of stories that are kind of more fluffy and funny. So I usually read at the readings. I do more fluffy and fun because I hear that people want to, that's what people want. But in the comfort of your home, you can read something more serious. But the radio comes to you in the comfort of your home, so I'm not quite sure.
No, you can start either or. I mean, we could do, you can start with a dark one, and then later on we could do a funny one if you want. So it's fine.
Okay. I didn't prepare anything too dark, I guess. I think I wrote my darkest story of all times yesterday, so I'm actually taking a break from the darkness myself. I think I'll start with a somewhat fluffy or light category story called Garbage. How about
okay.
that?
That's fine.
Should I just jump into it and start reading? We're not going to ask questions.
Yeah, go.
Or anything. Just
no,
read.
Yeah, just start reading and we'll just, I'll take questions after that.
Okay, let's do that. Garbage. Please forgive my mistakes. English is my second language. I need help, doctor. I have a problem with garbage. I am afraid of garbage. I see garbage everywhere. What? When was I first scared of garbage? I think it started when I was 20. I then lived in Siberia with a real jerk. That jerk was an aspiring philosopher. He dreamed about the Nobel Prize. He was stretched out on a pea-green couch in front of a broken TV. When asked to take garbage out, he always refused. Demonstrating a capacity to act is against my principles, he preached. Marsha, use your brain. How many times did I tell you? Show that you are capable of doing anything, and the garbage of the world will pour into your bucket. Translation, take out the garbage yourself. Following his principles, he never demonstrated any capacity for anything other than eating pickled herring and drinking vodka. For a few years, I was parading my capacity, along with empty vodka bottles, down the dirty staircase, working two shifts at a brick factory, giving birth to triplets, hand-washing diapers in ice-cold water, fixing sewage pipes, pickling herring, and shopping for vodka. I waited for his Nobel Prize. Then there was no capacity left. I went to live with my mother. Thus, the jerk stage was over. I believe that each girl goes through a jerk stage. If she's lucky, she might even get to some other stage. I got lucky, and there came a handsome prince with many capacities. He was an American engineer. He came to study the secret of Siberian bricks, saw me hammering the bricks, washed his head, and took me to America. We live in a lovely brick cottage covered with ivy. He puts orchids in my flaxen hair and fits his sewage pipes. He drinks only mango juice, cooks candlelight dinners, and takes the garbage out. He recycles. He plays chess with the triplets on two boards. It never snows. Suddenly, life is good, and you get used to the good life. You forget the junk. You watch a hummingbird shit on your hammock, and you are happy. I'm happy, Doctor. I never think about the jerk. But, Doctor, I see garbage everywhere. How? I might be lying in my hammock, and all of a sudden, I see the old pea-green couch floating by. A decomposing herring carcass reclines on it, a half-finished vodka bottle clutched to its ribs. It raises the bottle, winks, and says in the jerk's voice, "Here it's to you, bitch. You learned my lesson. You got the prize." I'm disgusted, and I say, "What are you talking about, you drunken idiot?" You know, capacity, Marsha. Remember? Life knows. They know, they use you, and they abuse you. The only way out is to use them. So bravo, you finally use your brains. Be a bitch. If you are not a bitch, life is a bitch to you. Lie in your hammock, watch your tropical sunset, drink your mango juice. Don't move a finger. They will fix the sewage pipes. And the heron laughs and drinks vodka out of the bottle. "Stop it," I say. "I'm not like this. Shut up and take the fucking garbage out." And then there comes the garbage. It creeps on me from the blue swimming pool, from pink rose bushes, and from behind the emerald ivy. It's everywhere. Empty vodka bottles, crinkled covered in newspapers, stinking cigarette butts, moldy cloth diapers, fish bones, broken bricks, rotten mangoes, dead hummingbirds, shit, shit, shit. It rises, it swells, it flows. It is about to get me. I wake up screaming, and my handsome husband is by my side. I put my trembling hands around his smooth, tan torso. Oh, no, it's a giant, smelly, dead herring. The morbid head is laughing. The slimy lips are reaching for me. "Here is your garbage," roars the heron. And I don't know, Doctor, what is the dream and what is the reality? What is this buzz? Is it a hummingbird or the broken TV set? Look at me like this, Doctor. You're scaring me. I might have become a bitch, but I kept my capacity to love. Just tell me, should I demonstrate it? Will the prince turn into a drunken jerk? Will the garbage of the world pour into my fucking bucket?
Nice. That was, yeah, that was pretty damn funny. And so I try to keep my, I try to keep myself from laughing in the middle of your, like, a couple of parts.
I heard little sounds, and I wasn't quite sure what it was.
So, have you always, ever since you were young, written stories?
You know what? Yes, I have. I have written stories and poems and novels since I was six, since I learned to write, actually.
And just out of curiosity, can you write in both languages, both your languages, or do you speak more languages?
Well, I speak Russian and English, really. I There was a lame attempt to speak French, but it kind of faded away. I can read a little French, and I learned Latin, which is very helpful and inspiring, but, you know, you don't speak Latin. But I used to write in Russian, of course, when I started. I started to learn English when I was 7, and it was this strange, weird Russian version of English. It was actually British version of English taught to us by Russian teachers. So all the mistakes that you hear, they're built in. Actually, dream like this, think like this, like all the articles are wrong, because that's how I learned it at a very young age. And I made attempts in writing English starting sometimes like around the age of 10, but it was mostly writing in Russian. And I think I started to really write in English in my early 20s, when I was still in the former Soviet Union, not in Russia, in Kazakhstan, but still a Russian-speaking country. And then something just clicked. When I came here, something clicked, and I only wrote English from then on. I don't ever write Russian or think in Russian when writing. It just doesn't happen.
Okay. And, okay, so the we'll get this question out of the way. If they want to find out, if our listeners, because we got listeners, by the way, if anybody wants to call in, feel free to do so and ask a question. But, how could they find out about your book, and how could they order it if, someone's sitting in the middle of the USA and they want to order your book?
Oh, well, it's actually really easy, very available on Amazon.com. It's also available from Epic Rights Press website. And from my website, there is a link. My website is ZarinaZabriskie.com, and there are all the links to all these wonderful places where you can obtain my book.
Okay, and what about, what's your future book that's coming out this year? Who are you doing that with?
Well, I'm actually really excited about the next year. This is already the year, 2013, because I guess that's the first real official announcement, but I have two books coming this year. I don't think I'm ready to discuss the schedule yet, but towards the end of this year, there will be my second short story collection coming from Epic Rights Press again. That will be a bigger book. There will be more short stories. And there's another book, which is my novel, and I wrote it a few years ago. It took me quite a few years to write it, and it's coming this year from local press, actually, Numina Press. It's a local San Francisco press. So it's a little overwhelming, and I'm working on a new book, so that's the plan. We'll see what happens.
Well, that's great. That's the that's what we're all shooting for here, some of us. Just keep publishing, keep writing, I guess.
You see?
That's all. It's all great.
I think what happens, people ask sometimes, like, why is it so many, so fast? I think that's what happens when you, for decades, you know, for years and years and years and tens of years, dozens of years, you're only writing and not trying to submit anything or publish anything. At some point, you accumulate so much that when you finally read, you'll make a move. Some of this stuff, when it gets published, comes out and it looks like it's a lot, but it really, I didn't write all of it in a year. It took me, you know, all my life to write it, so.
Yeah, you're just sitting on all this material for so long that you got so much of it. Understand.
Yeah, I'm like with an egg.
So do you want to switch gears and read some poems?
Sure. I feel like asking you some questions too. You feel very one-sided.
Well, let's read a poem, and then we'll go back to talking some more.
Okay, sounds good. I don't read my poems a lot. I guess either I'm not there yet, or it's just one area which I don't feel as much as the other areas to share. But I really love your poems, so I feel comfortable reading my poems to you.
Thank you.
I guess I will. That's kind of dark. These two poems just got published. They're short. They got published in Bourne Orchard Poetry in North Ireland very recently. So one is called Cancer.
Okay.
Cancer. Her hair is crimson orange, crisp, fruity, cranberry, citrus. She says, "I'm going to dye," sighs and goes on, "dye my hair, since I might lose it anyway." Kimmel. An airy curtain swirls in the wind, traces of Sunday flavor hang in the fall air. Chemo sounds like creamy sweets in a horror donut shop. Desert is still in the window. Silence. Cancer lives in her gentle insides. I imagine it is as beautiful as she is, as her bluish powder, her pale freckles, her silver rims, her tattoos. I look at her pixelated print textile, a sun spark in the glass button, an illustrated Bible on her desk, a picture of her son playing with a toy fire truck, an unfinished cup of steaming peppermint tea, and see death hovering over her like a shadow of a butterfly. Even her death is beautiful.
Well, that was, I don't think I've ever heard you read a poem before. That was pretty awesome.
Thank you. I don't read them a lot. I don't know. It's like right now I don't feel like I'm talking to many people. It feels like I'm just talking to you, so...
Yeah, that's the magic of radio. But we do get a lot of listeners, and you know, so that's pretty cool. I mean, we only have
three shows,
I think.
It feels like one on one. It's different. It's kind of quiet here, anyway.
Yeah. So So you just published those in the Bone Orchard, and I think I don't even know how to say his name, Michael McLenorn, I want to say, that he runs that,
yeah,
doesn't he, out in Ireland? Yeah. And,
yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was done. You can go.
Yeah, I got his book, and his latest book of poetry, Herein. I have it right here somewhere. And it's a beautiful book, by the way. I really loved his poetry. That's why I submitted. Actually, these two poems I wrote in the middle of the night when I couldn't sleep. And I sent them to him right away in the middle of the night, and it was during the day there. So, like, it was, I think, the fastest time I ever heard from anyone, because in 2 hours I heard from him, okay. he took two poems. I have another one which is also dark. I don't know if we want another dark poem.
No, go ahead.
It kind of follows the previous one in a way, in some ways, you know how they all are. I've never read this one aloud, so this will be a first time. And it's quoting Eliot from The Cocktail Party, which I like a lot, so. It's called One is Always Alone. Emptiness, the size of the world, is bigger, blacker than death. Scars instead of the winds, winds withered, winds wilted. Darker than even death, is impossibility to love. One is always alone. Death is only a transit train. Hell to hell. Dying will not be hard. Hell is always hell. Illusions are the worst. Never has a soothing consistency like a missing limb, like an internal wound, like the rain bleeding outside again and again, black blood, rivers, death, love, the same, nothing but loss, nothing but lies. Grief is the scariest when scowling. My heart used to tremble. My soul used to soar. Illusions are more cruel than axes. Pain never comes alone, always in packs, like yellow-teethed predators inside my screaming veins, eyes burning red, green. One is always alone.
Guys, that was a great ending. I was always a fan of the end sometimes of poems. But
Yeah, I know. I should like say the end.
So who are like who are some of the people like alive or dead or when you were growing up or as an adult like that have always moved you? Like writers or artists that you admire?
Yeah, writers, yeah. Mostly writers move me, dead or alive. Well, you know, I grew up on my grandmother's bookshelf, literally. This bookshelf and this grandmother, they pop up in my stories all the time and my novel. So all that we had at home was books. I brought a lot of books back home. There, I'm looking at them right now as we talk, and my books that came here with me. It's like my family. So what do I see here? I'm looking, I see the Russian shelf. It's like ceiling to floor shelf, you know. That's my pride. I'm going to be boasting. So I have the usual Russian kit, like Tolstoy, Dostoevsky, Gogol. I do have Chekhov. I'm not as keen on Chekhov as one would expect me to be. Nabokov is an old flame. Then, you know, 19th century poets like Pushkin, Lermontov. They are not translated well into English, so they are not known as well as, say, Tolstoy, Dostoevsky. Then I have all these art books and music books. And then I have a German shelf, which has, you know, Goethe. I love Goethe and Erich Maria Remarque and Rilke. And then it's Italian, with Dante probably will be leading. And the French guys are really good. I can't just go on like this. I'm just
telling you. Yeah, I like how you have them divided into countries.
Yeah, that's my thing. I have them divided into countries, except for I have mythology and folk and psychology separately, and there they are divided by these two genres. I have old books, like vintage books, which is a separate shelf, and I have special gift books, like books given me by special people. I have Japanese books, and the Zen poetry is very good. Like Japanese Zen monks and Zen warriors, their last poems are very, very good and inspiring. From American writers, you know, recent, I think my favorites are, in no particular order, Salinger, Fitzgerald, and oddly, Jim Morrison.
Yeah, there's another of the random ones. Yeah, that's
I'm
cool.
Just
like
random.
It.
No system. No system there whatsoever.
I like the I always like writers and stuff that are that I like now that are around that always have like a wide influence in their life, no matter what it may be. Like instead of just sticking to one
like
thing.
Who?
No, like how you like have this broad spectrum of all these like time periods and people from back then up until now in different places. I like when people try different things, you know. I always thought it's good to have fully loaded gun.
What are your favorites?
Oh, I have a lot. I have I'll just name a few. Like I'm a big fan of Saline.
I have him right there.
Yeah, I like Raymond Carver. I like Jeffers, and I like Bukowski and Kerouac and Berrigan, and there's a lot of them. Brodigan. I could go all the way back. And actually, my girlfriend introduced me to this Russian poet, and I can't say his name ever. It's got like two Y's in it for a first and last name, and I like him a lot. Yangli. He's still alive. What's that?
I wouldn't know them. I don't know anybody alive.
He's like he's like 80 years old or something. I don't know. He's like some guy from Russia, Yingling Yastevsky. Yeah, I think so. I think that's it.
Yeah,
she has a huge book. Yeah, I liked it. Yeah.
Oh, good. I was I could never form the right opinion because I kind of knew these people, not directly, but through the other writers that I knew, and I never got into the modern Russian stuff. They had to collaborate with the communists too much, and I dismissed them and never was able to take them for who they are literary-wise.
So to move on, like, when I saw you read a couple of times, when we all read there out in Oakland, you have you like to like get dressed up and read your stories to music and stuff like that and is that like have you always done like a performance kind of thing when you read out?
Never. No, seriously, never. Not that I ever wanted to. It kind of, you know, I always like to dance. Used to go dancing every week with my sister, and we would dress up and put makeup and listen to the music and dance. So I don't know, I guess I kind of made the wrong association and associated reading with dancing or something. Well, I don't know, seriously, I never read anything. I never been on stage in my life. I think my whole experience in school was I was there fir tree, like a tree. I was holding something in front of me, and I was impersonating a tree, and I didn't speak. And that was it. And then William Taylor Jr. invited me to read something, whatever I want, at his book launch, An Age of Monsters. And I had no clue how it works, what to read, what to say. And I tortured Sammy at home, my fiancé, you know, reading to him 1,000 stories, and finally I just wrote something 2 hours before the reading, and a poem that I wrote for William, and I just read it, and I guess I didn't know what to do, so I started to wave my arms and scream, and it was almost like singing without music, so next step was adding the music, and dressing up kind of came naturally. I don't know. I mean, it just, like, feels more fun to do it this way.
No, it fits what you're doing, because I remember after a reading that I did, because that day that we're all split up on that Saturday, I read at the tattoo parlor. Mm-hmm. Then I came and caught the end of your, when you were reading, I forgot, at some bar that you were reading at, and there was all this, like, marching and stuff going on in your story, and it kind of, like, captured me. It was pretty cool. I like that.
Oh, yeah.
So,
that was one of my most ridiculous things. That was the Kirdik Manifesto. That included marching. I don't usually march. It was only you caught me on my marching day.
That's fine. It was cool. Like, it fit what you were doing. Yeah, it was that last day, man. That last day, I was burnt out. I don't know how any more you guys could do it that day.
On Sunday, remember there was another region on Sunday, this whole marathon at Zyfaz. It was like people were fading away.
It looked like we were all, when we all rolled in there on Sunday, it looked like we were all just in a boxing match or something. I was so burnt out by that day. So that's like the segue. Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
No, I was going to say, if you want to lead into another story now, we got about 24 minutes, 25 minutes left, if you want to read another one of your stories.
Okay, we can do that. Let's see, I have a story that we hope will be a part of my second short story collection, and it's kind of about a cat, but it's not really about a cat, and it's not too dark. I think it's not dark at all, actually. So, today is not a dark day. Today is a light day. It's called My Lucky Cat, and I think it goes for about 9 minutes.
That's fine.
Longer. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's good.
It tells you a little bit about my background. It's not, none of my stories are really, how it is. It's not what really happened to you, but it's kind of what happened to you. So it explains when people ask me how it was growing up in the Soviet Union or how did you come here. I can't really tell this, but I think it comes through in the stories. That's one of those stories.
Okay.
It's called My Lucky Cat. She arrived at midnight. Uncanny eyes. Eyes that green only burn in the dirty snow, in the midst of the Moscow winter, in the darkest corner of the backyard. She looked at my fiancé once, and the rest just happened. John, a homesick American expatriate, who counted days till his flight back home, crossing out numbers on the wall calendar with a thick black Sharpie, forgot all about leaving Russia for good, pressed her to his chest underneath his red woolen scarf, and brought her to me. "Look, kitten," he said. "You are drunk off your ass," I said. "We are going to America. Where do we..." John passed out on the couch, his scarf still on. The kitten was as polite as the English queen. She sat in the corner and cleaned her white face, then rolled in a ball and fell asleep. "What's that?" asked John in the morning. "I'm going to work," I said. "And you sought it out. You brought her." "I have a kitten now," I told our accountant at work. "I thought you were going to America," she said. "What color?" She sounded like an emergency room doctor. "No particular color," I said. "Gray, white, and red, little black." "Don't you even think of getting rid of her," she said. "She is lucky. Your lucky cat. You throw her out, you throw your luck away." "I wasn't going to," I said. When I came home with milk and herring, the kitten was sitting outside the front door, back in the blue snow, staring at me with those feral eyes, calm, elegant, discreet. "Look at you," I said. "He just threw you back out. Never trust a man, kitty. Come on in. Bring me some luck." And thus she stayed. My daughter gave her a name, Lisa. She taught her to walk on hinder paws, taught her to catch digital mice on Discovery Channel programs, and sang Three Little Mice, See How They Run to her. "Speak English," she explained to Lisa. "We are going to America. Everyone speaks English there." Lisa jumped high like a kangaroo and used a toilet like a human. She killed our only plant. My daughter renamed him to Fred from Fyodor, tearing him out of his pot. Lisa slept with us. She ate with us. And when the time came, she went to America with us. Like us, she needed a passport. To obtain it, I went to a vet. Immigrating, asked the vet, looking at my tanned knees with hatred. I pulled my miniskirt down. The year was 1998, and the financial crisis had just hit Moscow. Everyone wanted to immigrate. Well, you can go, said the vet. She can't. Lisa looked at my knees, too. Why? I said. The shot. What about it? She doesn't have it. Well, give it to her, I said. Please. Impossible. She's supposed to have two shots. One 6 weeks ago, one the day before the flight, today. But I called you 8 weeks ago, I said, and you only told me about today. The vet squinted at his bitten nails, then at the door. It's a new rule, he said. Next. The vet was looking past my shoulder into the hallway, filled with coughing dogs and hissing cats. I noticed that he hadn't shaved for a few days. I closed the door. Wait, I said. I really need to take my cat. My daughter, she can't live without her. Next, cried the vet. Take your cat. Listen, I whispered. I have something right here. Help me. The year was 1998, and everything in Moscow was for sale. To get anything done, you bribed. To get garbage out, you bribed the janitor. To pass the company audit, you bribed the pension fund inspector. To get a job, you bribed human resources. I pushed $20 towards the vet over the sticky exam table. Lisa touched my hand with her soft paw. Maybe she thought it was a mouse. Citizen, are you kidding? Cried the vet. In the 7 years of my business career in Russia, I've never seen anyone declining a bribe. And people stopped calling each other citizens about 10 years ago. Sorry, I said, and pushed $100 bill his way. Take your cat, young woman. Veterinarians are not to be bribed, said the vet, shuffling out of the office. I shoved Lisa in the cage, ran back and forth across the street in my heels, Russian uniform, trying to catch a taxi, and finally went to another vet clinic. Then another, then another. After 5 clinics, I found out that veterinarians were the only Russian professionals immune to bribes. Animals, I told Lisa, wiping my tears. It's 8. All clinics are closed. Do I traffic you in America? I trafficked heroin from Ukraine to Russia, but cats into America? We are screwed. Meow, said Lisa. Hey, what's wrong? A black Mercedes stopped by. The window rolled down. A red face, a blue Nike tracksuit, a golden chain with a crucifix the size of Lisa's head. Kitty sick? Need a ride? A red hand emerged from the window. Oleg. Anya, thanks. Gypsy taxis were common in Russia. So were Mafia Mercedes. Men giving free rides to women just to chat were common. I was tired. I spent all my money on taxis. John flew to New York the day before, taking my daughter and 3 suitcases with him. I was to leave my motherland the next day. Lisa didn't have a shot. I plumped down into the soft leather seat, took a Marlboro from Oleg, and told him about Lisa, America, and the scrupulous vet. No way, said Oleg. Did you go to the clinic number 22? Just stepped out of the damn place, I said. Hey, what do you know, said Oleg, shrugging. Here, we are going back. I take my puppy there for shots. Had his teeth cleaned a month ago. Did you see the Jew vet or the old witch? Excuse me? The vet, was a Jew, big glasses, schnobble, or was it an old... The Jew. Hey, here's my buddy. He's a good Jew. You sit here, he said, getting out of the car in front of the clinic number 22. I go talk to the dude. Outside of the car, he looked like the Terminator. Do you want the cat, I asked? Nah, you just smoke. I saw the gun bulging from his tracksuit pocket. Guns bulging from pockets were common in Moscow in 1998. I worked as a liaison between American businessmen and Russian, well, authorities. Americans, you could tell by their Hanover bloodshot eyes and big scarves. The authorities had guns bulging out of their pockets and tattoos saying Mama on their bulging biceps. So did the mafia. I didn't care if Oleg was the mafia or an authority. He probably was both. Hey, girlfriend, what's the kid's name? Oleg's red hair popped out of the staff entrance door of the clinic number 22. Lisa. 5 minutes later, Oleg sat next to me, patting Lisa's head with his sausage finger, the golden ring sparkling in the dusk. Good girl, he said. Good Russian kitty. Going to America from the Moscow dump. You lucky bitch. Brrr, said Lisa, rubbing her ear against the red finger. I stared at a small blue document named passport. How did you get it, I said. I mean, what did you... Alex scratched the back of his head and spit out of the Mercedes window. Nothing. Just said, hey, bro, that chick needs help. I opened the blue book. Name, Lisa. Last name, Svensson. Gender, female. Age, 1. 5 stamps and a signature certified that Lisa had all shorts in accordance with something indecipherable. I don't know if I can thank you enough, I said, dreading the answer. In Moscow, 1998, the payoff would be simple and quick in the back seat of the black Mercedes, bulging guns and all. You do love your kitty, laughed Oleg. Relax, sis. Where do you stay? I'll take you home. You got a pack. I just love animals. We hugged each other in front of the gloomy building at the Garden Ring. Good luck there, sis, said Oleg. You show them. And remember, Russians don't surrender. He hit himself on his chest, and the crucifix bounced up and down, the malnourished figure on the cross slipping. I'll remember, I said. I flew to America on Aeroflot. A beautiful blue-eyed stewardess allowed Lisa to sit in my lap. Lucky kitty, she said, kind wrinkles filled with blue mascara. Lisa sat in my lap for 11 hours, purring and staring into my eyes with her green, quiet stare, her warm body working against my thigh, up and down, as the plane took me away from my home forever.
Well, that was great. I really like that one. You give a good good way with characters. Like I picture the character, I picture the guy in his jumpsuit and his gold chain there. Yeah, that was good.
Kind of archetypal type. Yeah.
So, have you got any plans? I know you got the books coming out at the end of the year, but do you got any traveling plans? Or are you sticking around San Francisco for a while?
I had to cancel a few trips because we had some family thing, but I will be reading in Los Angeles in the middle of February, and I have, it's in pencil, but I might be reading in New York and in Portland sometimes over the spring and summer. And that's probably it for now. There are some vague plans, but I'm not going to, until it's all written down. I try to go to Europe around September and travel extensively just with a backpack and a pen and a pad of paper and write a lot. So I'm trying to do it this year as well, but we'll see.
That's cool. It's good to get around. Like a lot of people don't do that. Like get around and do some readings and stuff. But you're in like a really good location where you could get to L.A. and Portland and Seattle and all those places. That's cool.
Oh yeah, we went to Albuquerque to New Mexico in November, and it was fantastic. There's like all these people who came from all over the country, and I guess you were thinking about going. I saw your name, but you were not there. That was good.
Yeah,
that was my first thing.
Yeah, it was too close to the holidays for me to spend the extra money, so I couldn't. And up here between November and March, it's really hard to, like, get out of here because of all the snow. So I kind of put my traveling off until the warmer weather comes. But,
Do you think you would visit in here? Yeah.
I'm thinking I'd like to come out with my girlfriend the next time they have that reading, if it's possible. I don't know. She might not be able to, because I don't know what the dates they're going to do it. But I'd like to come back and do that other one. If she can't come because of family stuff, then I might just, you know, come if I can afford to do so, because I had a blast with that last time. Yeah, I was thinking of doing that, and because we're trying to, like, save up to move out of here, so, you know, any kind of readings I might do probably be towards the second half of next year, you know, so I can't really go anywhere right now, but that's fine. But I've got to, because I just had that book that came out, and I got another one coming out next summer, so summertime-ish, so I've got to get out there soon.
Yeah, no, you should. You should. There's so many readings, and, like, you know, you'd be good. And congratulations on your book too.
Oh, thank you. But we're closing down to, like, the last few minutes here. Do you have anything short you want to close us out with? A poem or a small piece or something? We got about 8.5 minutes.
If not,
that's fine.
I have a very short poem, very, very short poem I can read if you want.
Okay, you can do that, whatever you want to read.
Okay, I'll read a very short poem, and that will be it for today, for the reading.
Okay.
It's called Hunt. As I run, as I fight, who is the hunter? Who is the game? What is the caliber of this metaphysical pistol? Am I a predator? Am I a human? All in one? One in many? Or am I chasing myself through the sunlit arches of mirrored worlds, my pupils dilated with fear?
Oh, that was a great ending, too. That was a good one. Like, you should submit or put out some more poems sometimes, because you get some good poetry. I enjoyed it.
Thank you. Yeah, no, you. I mean, I feel some poetry connection with you, because I really love, you know, you sometimes. I usually don't like it. Maybe oversharing, but I don't like it when people post poems on Facebook. Usually, but I like your poems, even when you post them on Facebook. I don't know how it works.
Oh, yeah, I get kind of like, you know, you publish them in books, and I publish them everywhere else, and it's kind of like when you live in the middle of nowhere where I do, it's kind of like my reading that I can give to at the moment, because if not, I'm going to be reading to squirrels in the park. So, kind of like, you know...
You can always send me some poems, Frank.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't really like to get into that. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, I do love your poetry. I think it has this certain recognizable pace and voice and images, and it really stays with you.
No, I appreciate that. Squirrels
are very lucky. Squirrels in your park are very lucky.
Well, we're going to be closing out here in a minute, and I'd like to thank you for coming on the show and taking the time out to be on the show.
Thank you so much for having me. It was actually very relaxed and nice and fun, and I enjoyed talking to you and reading the stories to you. I hope I appreciate hearing them, and
I'm sure I'll see you out on the road sometime. Within the year.
Yeah.
I see everybody at some point or another.
Exactly.
You have a good night there.
Yeah, you too. Thank you, Frank. And I'll talk to you soon. Send us some poetry.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Bye. Okay, that was Zarina Zabriskie, and you can find her website there, zarinazabriskie.com. If you liked some of the stuff you heard, her latest book, Iron, from Epic Rights Press, is available. I think it was last November it came out. And that can be at epicrightspress.com or Amazon, or you can contact Zarina. You don't know Zarina, you can contact me somehow, and I could, you know, tell you how to get a hold of her or something. And she has a few more books, as you heard, coming out, and you should really check out her show if you're in the San Francisco area and you never have, or if you happen to be where she's giving a reading, you should check it out. She's one of the good guys. So anyways, next week we're going to have, out of New Mexico, John Macker. And I hope I said his name right. I'm pretty sure it's said that way. But anyways, John Macker next week. New Mexico, 11 Eastern, 8 Pacific. And we are into the last few months of the show. And after John Macker, I believe, if I can get it's the reschedule of Jenny Fagan show from last summer. She's been disconnected from the world a bit, but I'll try to get a hold of her this week. And then after that, I don't know who's after that. But we got people coming up. We got, like, Gerald Lachlan and Lawrence Gladview and Kevin Ridgway and S.A. Griffin, and we got some good people coming up for the last few months, and it was really cool to do this show for almost a year, but I'm ready to move on from it. But until then, I guess see you next week, same time, what the fuck ever.